This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thank you.
Jade Gulliver presents a collection of podcast interviews about podcasts and media makers. Welcome to the Podcraft.
This is the very first episode of the Podcraft, and my name is Jade, and I'm the absolute self-proclaimed podcast junkie, and it is I'm trying to overcome my starstruck awe because Here with Josh and Sarah is by far one of my favourite podcasts, and I love listening to it. So I'm just thank you very much for being part of the show, Josh.
Oh, that's very sweet, and it is my absolute pleasure.
So Here with Josh and Sarah is basically a talk show-based podcast, and it's kind of evolved into a television show. But when it started, did you ever have any idea what the show would become?
Absolutely not. I actually work on the corporate side of our company, which is called Here Media, and our company owns Here TV, which is the gay and lesbian premium cable television network here in the United States, as well as the Advocate magazine, Out magazine, and then a series of digital websites as well. And I work in integrated marketing, so I oversee all those different brands. And, you know, I was just sitting in my office one day, and one of the gentlemen who works in operations and production came in and said, "Hey, you know, have you heard about these things?" This was like maybe 3.5 years ago, almost 4 years ago. And he's like, "Have you ever heard of these things called podcasts?" And I'm like, "No, what are they?" And he started to explain to me what they were and how they work. And I was like, "Hey, you know, these would be great marketing tools for all of our properties at the company. So yeah, let's do them." And he's like, no, I want to try it out with you. And I'm like, "Me? Why me?" And he's like, "Oh, because I think you're funny and you know everybody in New York City and you run around all over," which isn't the case, by the way.
Yeah.
It's just his impression. And he's just like, "Oh, you know, it would just be fun to have your sort of, you know, unique perspective on like life in New York and being a gay man and all that stuff." And I was like, "Oh, sure. Oh, whatever you want." And I literally thought, okay, I'll do this and, you know, it'll be an experiment, they'll pilot it, and then they'll really figure out, oh, what they need is sort of an on-air personality. And then oddly enough, the next day, in the New York Times business section, there was a front page in the section article on podcasts and what they were, and I was like, oh, it's, you know, it's meant to be. So we just sort of started very simply, and it was just me and there was like a mixing board and a microphone, and we did it in our boardroom. And Sarah was really the sort of, quote, producer slash engineer who was doing the sound mixing. Mm-hmm. And it was just me chatting about crazy things that I'd done or thoughts that I had. And I would inadvertently just talk to Sarah because she was there, and it was easier for me to sort of refer to her. And then a couple weeks in, the producer came in, and he was like, "Look, if you're going to talk to Sarah, we'll give her a mic so she can at least just audibly respond, because now it's just sort of she's responding, but it's we're not recording it." Mm-hmm. And that's really what the genesis was, and it just started really simply. And then Sarah and I just kind of, you know, sort of clicked, and we are friendly. I mean, and there was just something fun about our different. We have very different energies, and she just sort of is very dry and sort of, you know, sort of comes in underneath where I'm sort of a little bit over the top. And it just kept growing, and we did the audio podcasts for a while, and then they're like, "Hey, you know, we're going to start videotaping them, and we're going to do short format video for as online video content." And so they would take the half-hour interview and cut it down to 6 minutes or so, and then about, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, they said, "You know what, we're going to actually just develop it into a half-hour weekly series." So It kind of all sort of came about organically. It wasn't anything I specifically set plan to do, and it just sort of took its own sort of progression.
Your podcast is produced with the backing of a network, but there are podcasters out there broadcasting from their kitchen tables. So do you think that the approach and the audience is different?
I don't. I mean, I think that, you know, I sort of look at podcasts as the sort of audio version of a blog almost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when blogs sort of exploded about, you know, 2 years ago and everybody had blogs, you know, there is a sort of natural attrition rate, like ones that have something to say and have some, you know, sort of point of view and some, not necessarily, I don't mean substance in necessarily in terms of subject matter or topic, but are substantive that really draw people. Those ones will just, again, organically sort of rise above and people will pay attention to those. And, you know, the ones that don't, won't. And I don't think that that matters so much whether you're doing it at your kitchen table or you're doing it in our studio in Times Square. Mm-hmm. The only difference is that, you know, we get to videotape them and I get a set built for me and I can, you know, I don't have to do any of it. They pull me out of my office, plop me down, stick some headphones on my head, and I'm ready to go.
Do you, I was listening to your first podcast actually tonight before I came on. I thought it might motivate me to get pumped for my very first one.
Oh dear!
And it was very interesting to kind of go back and see how the show's evolved, because I remembered feeling really indignant because it was like, we never hear much about Josh and Sarah. It's always about the guest. And when I went back and listened to this first episode, it was just you talking for this entire time. And I felt like, oh, I wish I'd listened to this earlier.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. You know, people actually that's not an uncommon, that's not uncommon feedback for us. In fact, Eric Feldman, who is, head of production, who's actually the sort of executive producer, if you will, of all that stuff out of New York, mm-hmm. you know, he said to me, he's like, you know, the ones that people really enjoy the most were you and Sarah just sitting and talking. He always encouraged us to, like, do shows, to sort of bank shows where it's just Sarah and I just sitting there talking and goofing off. And he's like, you know, we get a really good response to those. And we were always like, no, we have to have guests. We have to have guests. And my thing is, you know, I went to college and lived in L.A. for so long and worked in film and television, you know, everything is celebrity bent. I'm like, no, you know, you've got to get the name. It's not about me. And, yeah. And but that's very sweet of you to say, you know.
And now you've become a celebrity podcaster.
Now, really, Jade, I don't know that I would necessarily call myself a celebrity, but it is really funny because, you know, Sarah's not gay.
Yeah.
So it was also a very interesting sort of dynamic having this really smart sort of, she's very sort of alternative, mm-hmm. you know, if you will, but she's not gay. And so it was a nice sort of combination of us. But I, you know, I go out to gay bars or clubs or, you know, whatever, events. And so, you know, I get recognized every once in a while, especially since it's been on the air for mm-hmm. About 8 months now. And the first thing people ask me always is like, hey, where's Sarah? And I'm like, we're not attached at the hip. And she's, you know, home in Queens, like doing her thing. And I'll come in the next day. I'll be like, oh, yeah, someone else stopped me. And she's like, damn, nobody ever stops me. I'm like, well, Sarah, you're not going where the audience would go. So.
Oh, speaking of your guests, you've had some really, really good guests. And I say that I do love hearing more about you guys, but I guess the guests have been really good just for me, learning more about what's out there for the gay and lesbian community and, you know, what kind of great things people are producing. How do you make a decision about who you're going to have as your guest? Do you have any say whatsoever, or is it just like handed to you?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that's like the whole sort of thrust of the show was, who does Josh want to talk to?
Yeah.
And that's, so they, I actually, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of it, as you know, like any sort of, you know, broadcast, whether it's just audio or television broadcast or whatever, you know, will have some sort of promotional component to it. So we do get approached by a lot of people, like, who are just having their first CD come out or their first book come out or, you know, their show is opening off Broadway. So, we get a lot of people who are looking to do, you know, the sort of promotional piece of it as well, but it's mostly people that I just want to talk to, mm. who will, you know, who I sort of either reach out to or, you know, get connected to or happen to know, and I'm like, hey, you want to come on my show? And they'll either say yes or no, and then they come on, and it sounds a little more informal than it really is, but the sort of genesis of it is just that. It's like, you know what? I would really like to talk to Martina Navratilova. Anybody know her? And then they're like, hey, we're actually doing this thing with her, and I'm like, okay, well, see if she'll come in and talk to me for a half hour.
And so has there been anyone that you haven't got yet that you are waiting for?
The only person who I've asked, and he hasn't said no, that he won't do it, but he hasn't actually come on the show yet, is Perez Hilton.
Oh, okay.
And I've known him for a while, and I should have gotten him a couple years ago before he, you know, hit it so big. But now he's just so busy, and I'm always like, come on my show. And he's just like, ugh. Like, you know, the last thing he needs to do is another talk show. I mean, the guy is so incredibly busy and doing everything under the sun at this point. But he's the only one who, but like I said, he hasn't said no that he won't do it. He's just the only person I can think of offhand that, like, I keep asking, and it hasn't worked out yet.
Yeah. Has there ever been a moment when you've had these guests in when, after the mics have gone off, they've said something that you wish had come up during the show?
Yeah. I mean, it actually happens a lot, because what happens is, particularly people who aren't that well-versed in sort of, like, the interview, I mean, because there is a certain skill to it, mm-hmm. you know, there is, like, a publicity skill, and, like, some people are phenomenal at it, and they have got their talking points down, and they can just, you know, chat and whatever. And other people do get really nervous, and then all of a sudden, you know, you take the headphones off, the mic is off, and then you're just sort of sitting there waiting, because basically what happens after the show ends, you know, we just sort of sit and wait, and they come in and turn all the lights off and camera, and then we do some photos with our guests, because we have like a photo wall, so we just sort of sit there and wait, and, you know, you just continue chatting across the table, mm-hmm. While we're waiting for everybody to shut down and get the photos ready, and sometimes, yeah, they just, the minute the microphone gets off, they just feel so much more relaxed that, like, they'll start telling a really great story, like, oh, yeah, you know, this happened, and I'll be like, oh, you know, we should have gotten that. And actually, sometimes we actually get them, because it'll take them a couple extra minutes to go into our mixing room is sort of on the other side of the office, so we've actually ended up capturing stories after the show is, quote, officially over, mm-hmm. that we've used in the interview as well.
Sarah has left the show as of this week, is that correct?
She did. We taped our last show last Friday, and I think it was our 190-somethingth show together. And, yeah, it was. She's going off. Her sister, who she's very, very close to, is about to have twins, mm-hmm. and her sister's husband is an umpire, so he travels at this time of year, and so she didn't want her sister to be alone, mm-hmm. During the last bits of her pregnancy, so she's going to go and spend the next 2 months with her sister until the babies are born, and then probably stay a few months after, probably till September. And then her family's from Philadelphia, and, you know, she's always sort of missed being around her family. She's from a big Irish Catholic family, and she's really missed it, and so she's going to move back down to the Philadelphia area afterwards. But I was really, really bummed. I was really bummed, I have to say.
Oh, especially because you've put her name in the title of the podcast.
Yes, we did. Which is now called Here with Josh, .. Because we're actually looking for, we've got a search going for the new Sarah. The search for Sarah is on. And I think for a little while, what I'll probably do is just have guest hosts. I've talked to a bunch of people who've always wanted to do it. And so I'm going to bring in different guests, mm-hmm. to, depending on who the actual guest of the day is, I'll find like a host that sort of coincides with that, and it'll be fun. I think it'll be really fun.
How do you think the show will change now that you've kind of gotten used to having Sarah? I mean, it started off that it was just about you, and then Sarah came into it, you know, and now you're on your own again.
I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping to find like a co-host that, you know, it, you know, like any sort of relationship, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, there's no way I'm going to be able to replicate my sort of dynamic with Sarah. It was very unexpected. You know, not that Sarah and I weren't friends, but like, we didn't really know each other when we started. Like, mm-hmm. we work in different departments. I knew who she was. She, in fact, sat in a desk right outside my office and would usually complain about the music I was playing in my office and come and close my door. But that was pretty much the extent of how I knew her, mm-hmm. before we began to do that. And so it was a very unexpected relationship, and we had great affection for one another, and we're very, very different. So, you know, we're very aware of the fact of not trying to replicate that or replace Sarah, but find someone who I have another dynamic with. And, you know, I can't really say what that's going to be. I mean, I'm hoping that it'll sort of some of the sort of foundations of what we've set out and sort of created with the show, which are just that it's, you know, a lot of it is based on my sort of personality and sort of ability to just sort of like put my foot deep down into my mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, the good part was that every time I put my foot in it, Sarah would just sort of let me put my foot in and then sort of slowly bring me back before I launched myself over the cliff. So,
so are you planning to have a reality TV style search for a new co-host?
We talked about that. I mean, we jokingly were like, oh, we should do like a whole show around the search for Sarah.
Yeah.
You know, my real job outside of the hosting part is just incredibly, incredibly busy. And it sort of hit a very intense point right now. We're working on some really, like, sort of major shifts in our company. And the thought of doing anything else, I just can't really add it to my day. So yeah. We sort of backed off from that idea. And I think we're just going to do a more traditional sort of quiet search. And we'll bring a couple different people in. I'll meet with them, and then we'll sort of test them out with different shows and see who works and who doesn't work. And
I'm sure that the audience will have an opinion on that too.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
How do you handle this kind of interaction that you get from the audience?
You know, I have to say, for the most part, other than some hate mail, just sort of ridiculous, like, hate mail that says, you know, all faggots should get AIDS and die type of hate mail,
mm-hmm.
Which I completely ignore, even though it does bother me, I just sort of ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than those very, very, very rare instances, I would say 99% of all the emails and calls that we get are so incredibly sweet and wonderful. And like, that's the part where, you know, there are times where over the last few years where my job gets so intense and I'm just like, oh, you know, do I really have time to do this? I mean, you know, a guest comes in, it takes, you know, at least an hour and a half for me to sort of prep the questions. And then it's another hour of the interview. And then there's like the sort of like, you know, little part after. So, you know, when we're doing 3-4 guests a week, it the time-consuming part of it really adds up, and I've thought, you know, oh, I just have to let them know I can't do this anymore. And then, you know, I'll get a letter from somebody in the military who is, you know, closeted and says, you know, that his only sort of lifeline to anything gay are the shows because he can listen to them privately. Or a girl in, you know, Sweden, like, somehow stumbled upon it, and she feels like she's the only lesbian in her town, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, you know, a certain guest has helped her figure out, like, about certain gender identity issues. I mean, it's things like that where suddenly you're like, wow, this is, you know, I mean, I sit in a square black box that's probably, you know, 15 by 15, and, you know, with a big bright light shining on me, and sitting next to somebody that I know, and feel like we're just sort of goofing off a little bit, but we forget that it goes out into the world and God knows where it lands, and when it lands and it's sort of, you know, that sort of like sonar comes bouncing back to you, it's like it's very, very heavy. It's really profound sometimes. And it's not because of anything we do, but just when you see what what people need in the world, and it's an interesting reflection so it keeps me wanting, you know, because our show's really tiny in the grand scheme of the world. It's, you know, I don't know that, you know, I'm certainly not Oprah or Dr. Phil. So it's very, very tiny, but, like, it's amazing the impact. And you will see, Jade,
mm-hmm.
you will have the effect, too. You'll be very surprised where your show lands and what effect it has on people.
I guess, like, that kind of leads into another question about, here is obviously a gay and lesbian network, and where I'm recording right now is Joy, another gay and lesbian radio station. Why do you think it's so important for there to be media outlets that are specifically for that audience?
For the gay and lesbian audience?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think that we can leave it up to our straight counterparts to actually give fair and accurate representations of gay, lesbian, and transgendered people in the world. Like, you know, sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. And, you know, I think that we can sit back and hope that they will include us in books and magazines and in television shows and in plays and in music, but the likelihood is that, you know, they're not going to. So we need to create all that stuff ourselves, which is, I think, why when I first came to, because I first started working for the television network part of our company 5 years ago, mm-hmm. why I thought it was so exciting. My background was really in film, television, and theater. And, you know, it does feel like a mission every day. It feels like you're part of a movement every day. And, you know, there are, in, I don't know, in Australia, but, you know, in the United States, there are, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cable television shows, large and small. Mm-hmm. I mean, cable television networks, sorry. You know, like in the 600s or 700s.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the United States, we have two that are dedicated to gay and lesbian programming. Two out of hundreds, I think, you know,
yeah.
I think that not only is that good, but they are absolutely necessary, and I think there's even room for more. I mean, we can't, and this is something we face every day at the network in particular, but at the print magazines as well, but we can't be everything to every gay and lesbian and transgendered person. I mean, we get, you know, I know people are very touchy about, you know, the amount of programming we have for women or the amount of gay programming we have for people of color or the amount of transgendered program. We can't be everything to everyone. So somebody else has to come along and help us,
yeah.
which is why when, you know, people ask like, oh, you know, do you view Logo as your competition? I'm like, no, I view Logo as my ally because they're picking up some of the slack that we can't do and vice versa. Like we're doing things that they can't do. And it's like without them, it's a really bad sign that this market is not sustaining two, you know, very significant pieces of programming.
Thank you so much for joining me, Josh. You can get
absolutely.
You can get the Here with Josh .. podcast off the Here TV website, which is heretv.com, or your preferred podcast catcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joycast of the Podcraft. For more great Joycasts and the show blog, check out joy.org.au/thepodcraft. The Podcraft is produced by Jade Gulliver, audio assistance by David Lim. Thanks to the support of Joy members and sponsors. To support the station, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.